The conference is now being recorded.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
This is Gloria Spratley Brown. I'll be facilitating the funding opportunity conference call for the 2014-2015 Charles E. Perkins application. We will discuss the secondary application, post-secondary application, and briefly talk about the competitive Department of Juvenile Justice Service application. The good news, this is a continuation from our original five-year plan. So basically, I'll be highlighting the application process and answering any questions you may have. I'll be referencing a couple of documents, so I want to make sure that you have those documents available. We have a PowerPoint presentation that's on our website. We also have each of the funding opportunity RFAs on our website. And at some point, I may reference the Carl D. Perkins implementation guide. So I'll start with the PowerPoint presentation and just talk a little bit about our conference call etiquette. Please make sure that you've placed your phones on mute. Sometimes in the conference calls, we have some background noise, so if you will follow the instructions there on slide 4, star 6 to mute, star 6 to unmute. Today's the agenda, you'll hear from a couple of people, myself, and you'll hear from Amy Albee. And at the end, you'll hear from Marcy Begg, who would be responsible for giving you information about our online survey. Briefly, the goals for today's conference call would be to give you the information for our funding opportunities, talk about specific programmatic information, reporting information, and how to submit your RFA. On slide 7, you will find the list of the different types of RFAs that are currently posted on our division's website.
Excuse me, Ms. Brown, can you tell us where the presentation is on the DOE website?
Sure. If you go www.fldoe.org, /workforce/DWD grants, that's one word, DWD grants/. And under the header, funding conference call. I'll give you a second way to enter it. If you'll just go to the DOE website, which is fldoe.org, on the left-hand side, click Career and Adult Education. Left-hand side, click Federal Grants. Then click Perkins, and you will find it that way as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I will continue on slide 8. We have one competitive funding opportunity entitled the Department of Juvenile Justice. I'll speak specifically about that as well. The purpose for this particular funding source is, again, to assist our students and developing more academic and career and technical ed skills in the secondary and post-secondary education. We are looking for students who elect to enroll in CTE. So the dollars should be spent on programmatic design, implementation, equipment, staffing to support career and technical education. On slide 10, the 14-15 estimate from the department, the U.S. Department of Education, is roughly $61 million. It would be great if all $61 million could be dispersed out to the locals. However, we do have to divide that $61 million in accordance with the federal law. On page 11, you will see how the department elect to distribute the dollars. You see the administrative costs. That's for all of our administrative work here at the state level. We offer some specific targeted state leadership projects. And then the $57 million would be distributed amongst three different titles to the locals. So $57 million of the $61 million will be allocated out to our local programs, secondary, post-secondary, and reserve. Under the reserve fund source, the law says that we may use up to 10% of our allocation, our set-aside for aid to district, to support special targeted projects. And the Department of Education established some years ago, along with some of our practitioners, those targeted projects. One of the targeted projects would be our rural and sparsely pop allocation. Another targeted project would be our service to the BJJ program. And another targeted project under reserve would be the support of career and technical ed to the School for the Deaf and Blind. And lastly, one of our targeted projects that will be funded under the reserve category will be the support of career and technical education to our lab schools. Those are the schools, the developmental research schools, that are supported through many of our colleges in the state. And not to leave out the virtual school support as well. All right. The first application that's mentioned here in the PowerPoint is on slide 12. And it basically gives you the breakdown how we allocate the set-aside for secondary. If you reference back to page 11, we set aside $26 million for our secondary allocation. The law specifies how the state must disperse the dollars. If you'll see here, we have a 30-70 split, and we collect this information from our U.S. Census table and pop it in our formula, and that's how the disbursements are made. On our post-secondary allocation, it's a little different. There is, you will find in the law, and that is the Caldy-Perkins Act of 2006, instructions on how to allocate dollars on post-secondary. However, we also have the option as a state to request an alternative formula. And when Florida submitted our plan to the U.S. Department of Education for our 2006 and plan, we elected an alternative formula. And I will say to you all that that alternative formula, we had the opportunity of pulling together a group of local tech directors, college deans, to ensure that the data element that we were selecting would be data elements that we could collect across all delivery systems. So if you look at page 14, or slide 14, that's the list. So collectively, those are the items that we use to determine economically disadvantaged for the purpose of post-secondary CTE programs. So again, we take the data from those various data elements and pop them into a formula, and that's how the disbursement takes place. So over the next few slides, I'm going to actually go over some of the key components of the application. This is where I'll actually be looking at one of the requests for proposals, request for application, and I'm looking at the post-secondary application. Again, on slide 16, it kind of guides you where to find them. And we just caution you to please read over the applications. Not major changes, but there are a few minor changes in the area of program of study, which I'm sure Amy will share with you. But we do ask you to read over the applications to make sure that your proposed 14-15 plan coincides with the requirements in the RFA. And we did remove a few items, but nothing major. On slide 17, we ask you to save the application narrative. If you were to follow the application narrative as outlined in the RFA, you would be ensured to capture all of the components that are required for the submission. The good news, some 8 years ago, 2006, if my count is correct, 7-8 years ago, each of your programs wrote what we call a 5-year plan that would cover through 13. And in that comprehensive plan, you expound on all of the various services that your agency would do to implement your post-secondary, secondary programs. You wrote a response to all of the required components under the law. And what we've asked over the years would be for you to go back, reflect back on your original submission, reflect on any subsequent submissions, and only provide us information that change. Because here in the agency, we've maintained an original copy of your original 5-year plan and all submissions after. So that's why we ask you to look back on your previous submission. On slide 18, we go into the narrative components by section. But if I could for a moment, I want you to flip to one of the RFAs, and I am looking at the post-secondary RFA. And I'm looking at the post-secondary RFA under page 1. The law requires that we award the dollars to local education agencies. And under the state, that would be colleges and districts that offer post-secondary services. So it is an entitlement to your agency. On page 2, we do list our budget period, July 1 through June 30th, and this is federal money. We talk about the target, and May 19th is the desired due date. And I say that because if for some reason you're not able to submit your application by May 19th, it will be okay, because it is an entitlement for your agency. No one else could apply for your agency's allocation. However, the law requires that in order for an agency to receive a July 1 start date, you must have your application in this office on or before June 30th. So whereas we will say to you, May 19th is our requested, preferred, really, really want you to have it in by May 19th because that will allow our staff roughly a month and a half to go over the application, negotiate with you any additional changes that are required. So as close to July 1 as possible, you can have your award notification. So we really want you to try to stick to that May 19th date, but if for some reason you run into difficulty, do note that as long as the application is in this office on or before June 30th, you will be fine. I'm still referencing the post-secondary RFA, and I'm on page 3. Page 3 will provide you with the program managers that will work with you to ensure that your application complete contains all of the required documents. So if you have any questions or concerns, please contact the program manager. I will say that the county and college list changed slightly. So please look at the list, because we did realign some of the counties, so perhaps the person that you are currently dealing with will not be your program manager for the 14-15 program year. On page 4 of the post-secondary request for application, please look at the terms, conditions, and assurances. This is a document that all agency heads, your college president, your superintendent, they've already signed this document. It is on file here at the department. It begins to share with you your method of payment because it's federal, because you, one of our state local education agencies, you will have the ability to draw your money down. Please read the executive order and fiscal requirements. The Green Book is one of our governing documents to help our programs implement from a fiscal standpoint. If you have any questions regarding amendments and changes to your project after you have been awarded, please reference that document. You will receive from our agency an award notification. Sometimes we'll hear us call it a DOE 200. That document is very important, because you cannot encumber funds for your program until you receive that document. So that's like a piece of gold for us. What we've done in the past, once the application is completed and all parts, the grants management office will issue the award notification. According to our corporate policy, the original will be mailed to your agency head. Again, that would be the superintendent and or college president. As in many large organizations, it may take a while for that document to get from the president's office down to the dean's office to encumber funds or the fiscal officer. So what we will do is immediately email the director a scanned copy of the award notification, the entire packet. And so that's very helpful, and it seemed to expedite our programs being able to start immediately. Please be mindful of allowable expenses. Make sure that you are familiar with the Green Book, familiar with the OMB circular, familiar with the EGGR document that supports fiscal management with federal programs. Here recently, supplanting has been an issue. I just caution you to the rule of thumb. If you would like to charge something to the federal program, make sure that at that item that you're charging to the federal program, you did not move the cost from a state or another fiscal source. Supplanting for us is really simple. Anything you add to the federal program should be a new charge, something new. You can't decide, last year I paid for this staff through my state workforce fund, and this year I'd like to move that staff's salaries benefit over to the federal program. You cannot simply exchange that position from one source to the other. However, if that staff was taking on some additional work, you could do a proportion of that staff, only the new services and new dollars. So I always caution you to that. Our program managers, they look for that. When they're looking at salary positions, they may ask you, was this position charged to the grant last year? Also, when you're buying equipment, sometimes you're replacing equipment that perhaps, I'm just going to use a police academy, may want to replace a car, a demo car that they use in their training. One of the first questions and lead questions we'll ask you when we're looking at replacing equipment, where did you buy this the last time? So think about that when you're considering some of those charges. Under the federal program, we have a maximum of 5% for local administrative costs. That will include indirect. We've had some questions about that. Under this particular federal program, the maximum an agency may charge will be 5%, and that would include both indirect and administrative costs. And we kind of give you a description in the midsection here on page 5 of the RSA, what we consider administrative versus indirect expenses. Equipment purchases. You know that in most cases, when we look at our budgets, many of our programs utilize this fund source to help upgrade in the equipment area, which is great. The OMB circular specifies what equipment is defined as $500,000 in our current circular. However, here at the department, we would like to reduce that to $1,000. So I'm looking at my page 5 and 6 of the post-secondary application. And this information is common across all of our RFAs. So for us, you must provide us with an equipment projection list or form for any item $1,000 or more. But I caution you to the requirement under EGGR 80.32. Under 80.32, you are required to do a physical inventory of property purchased with the federal dollars at least every 2 years. So regardless to the price of the item, if you purchase it with federal money, you must maintain proper record inventory. I've heard when our compliance team go out, some of our districts and colleges said, oh, we didn't tag that item because it was less than a certain value. When purchasing equipment with federal dollars, regardless to the price, you must maintain inventory and tag that item. So when the compliance team come out, you will have that list. So please remember that. And if you have not checked your inventory in the last 2 years, please consider doing that, because that is under federal law. I'm still looking at page 6 of the post-secondary application. Record retention, it's 5 years, or if you're in an audit situation, it's 5 years after the close of the audit. So minimum 5 years, but if you're an agency where that program is being audited and a finding and you're working on a resolution, it's 5 years after the close. All programs will be required at the end of the program to submit a financial summary report, and that we call it the DOE 399, and that is due on or before August 20th, 2015. Intellectual property, please read that. When you're purchasing, when you're developing items using the federal money, intellectual property clause is in effect. Reporting outcomes, all of our districts and colleges report through the various district reporting systems here back to the department. We call it the Community College Tech Center Informational Management System. You'll be required to do that as well. And follow the amendment process in the Green Book. I briefly interject our compliance monitoring team on page 8. You'll find the quality assurance document, document that our managers would use if you selected to have a full on-site monitoring visit in a calendar year. They would pull from the manual that's posted here. The link is posted. So if you have not had the pleasure of meeting the team, you may wish to go and take a look at that document. Equity, access, GEPA, this is very important. This seemed to be a common finding in our current 13-14 program year. And working with our Director Ellen, she thought it was important that we interject this piece of information. The actual equity and access law is probably 30 pages, 40 pages long, but this is just one piece, one snippet of a piece that we just want to caution you to and remind you that the requirement that this information be visibly posted at your agency, throughout your college, district, throughout the facility, that seemed to be a common item that we've noticed, and it is a finding. So please work with your equity coordinators at your facilities to make sure that your agency follow the guideline and law. At this time, I'll kind of transition back to the PowerPoint presentation. We stopped on slide 18 of the PowerPoint presentation, and this is when we get into the actual narrative components of the application. Listed here on slides 18, 19, as well as 20, you will find all of the different sections, the narrative sections that are required. I emphasize the word required under the federal law. But the good news, because you've expounded on the very same areas in your five-year plan and all subsequent plans, you basically need to record any changes. I'm going to kind of go through how to submit the application. You have to submit the complete narrative. You have to submit the budget. Under separate cover, we will work with you on your local performance levels. Now, under the law, it requires that we negotiate, or if you choose to negotiate, your performance levels. That's what the law says. You may negotiate. However, since we implemented Perkins 4 in 2006, we have held all of our districts and colleges to the state level. So it is our expectation that all of our districts and colleges will be held to the state level. Under the law, we have established a process by which a district may discuss the negotiation. That entire set of information and documents will come to you under a separate email from the chancellor. We are in the final stages of working on that document, and it's an easy web-based system. So you're able to go in with a passcode, access your district or college information, and write a brief narrative regarding how you will, what you will do to improve in a performance area where you have not met the state target. If you choose that the state target is more than your agency can accomplish, then you may contact your program manager and instructions will be in there. I'm happy to say, I would say over the last 5-6 years, we've only had maybe 2 people request negotiations, and not all negotiations are granted. So I would caution you to that thought, but do note it is available if you choose to. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through each of the required components. If during the Q&A session you have a specific area that you would like for us to speak on, I will answer any specific questions regarding any specific area. But to keep in line with the agenda, we are at the application submission process. We are asking that you submit to us 1 original copy, 1 original signature, can't be an original copy, 1 original signature, and 3 copies. It's important that you make your copies and make sure that you check your pages. Sometimes we rather single pages, not duplex pages. We rather single pages. But do check to make sure that the copier captured all of the pages. I'm on slide 20, and I'm going to specifically here talk about the rule and sparsely pop application. If I may back up for a minute, let me back up on the post-secondary application. On page 10 of the post-secondary application, it mentions a minimum funding amount required, and that's important. The federal law requires that in order for a secondary application agency to apply as an independent standalone agency, your allocation must be $50,000 or greater. If your allocation is less than $50,000, then the law requires you to form a group, also known as a consortia, of other small agencies or a leading agency that received greater than $50,000 so that you can share services, share the funds to offer post-secondary services to your students. We're seeing a lot of this in some of our smaller rural areas. The waiver for this does not include a waiver that will allow you to apply as a standalone. The waiver in this category only waives specific requirements under the law. So I just want to make sure that that is recognized and that you're aware of that, because we look at those charts and we do have a few new rural counties that are under the $50,000 mark that have not experienced this before. But unfortunately, you will have to form a group with another provider that received greater than $50,000. I cannot waive that option that will allow you to stand alone. On the secondary side, that minimum requirement is $15,000. I don't know why the great people that wrote the law chose to treat the secondary people different. But under the secondary requirement, agencies may request a waiver if their allocation is less than $15,000 and they meet a rural, sparsely popped area. They can apply as a standalone. So I want to make sure I give you the difference between the two. Secondary, $15,000 or less. If you submit a waiver request to me and in the application it provides where to send the waiver and you meet the requirement of rural and sparsely popped, then I will grant you a waiver to apply as an independent or standalone. I repeat, on the post-secondary, cannot offer you the option of a standalone. With that, take some water. I'm going to flip back to the PowerPoint presentation, slide 20. I mentioned to you under the reserve category, we've set aside some dollars to support rural and sparsely popped areas. The only difference with the rural and sparsely popped areas, it is a county allocation. A county allocation. So in many cases, when you're in a county and you may have a secondary at a district and you may have a college supporting that, it is a shared allocation. The requirement under A1A states that you must use the rural dollars for one of the four items here. Now, we were very clever because within those four items, you can basically do anything. But you have to specify which of these four items you will use the rural and sparsely popped money to support. And I can assure you, on the back end, when our compliance team comes out to look, they're going to make sure that the money you spent cover one of these two, one of these four areas. You must provide a letter of agreement between the two institutions within the same county area. The superintendent and college president must be in agreement. You cannot submit an application without the letter of agreement between the superintendent and college president. Here at the department, we have not established any rules on how to share the funds or whether you have to share the funds. All we're saying is in a county where a college is serving and the district is serving, you must come to an agreement. We've had successful collaboration for a number of years. If you have specific questions regarding this, hopefully I can answer them during the Q&A, or you can always call me after the call, after the conference call, for more details. The other spotlight I'd like to spotlight on slide 21 is the competitive grant for DJJ residential facilities. We've instituted this a number of years prior to 2006. It's been a very successful program. It is competitive, however. So if you are interested in supporting secondary instruction at the DJJ student at the residential facility, here is your opportunity to get some additional dollars to support that program. Because it is a competition, all applications must be in by 5 o'clock on May 19th. We cannot and will not accept applications for this particular funding category beyond that date. On slide 22 of the PowerPoint presentation, it kind of goes over some of the narrative components required for the DJJ application. They're pretty standard, so I will not go into explanation on each of these. However, if you have a specific question during the Q&A, please feel free to ask. Again, slides 23, 24. Again, these are advisements that we always like to extend when you're writing your budget narrative, regardless to competition or the secondary, post-secondary. You just want to make sure that you ask yourself the question when you're writing items into your budget: are the costs reasonable, allocable, necessary? Part of our responsibility here at the agency would be to determine if it's fair market value. We may ask you additional questions about a particular piece of equipment. We may ask you additional questions about a salary or a benefit level. We have that right because the department will be looking at the budgets to make sure that they're fair. And we know that depending on the geographical location of your district, salaries are different, costs are different. We take all of that into consideration. But it is our responsibility to make sure that the prices are fair. Always in your narrative, answer the old who, what, when, where, why kind of thing. We want to make sure that in that budget narrative that you're providing for us, I'm buying a piece of equipment for the culinary arts program at Tech School A. College, you might say, I'm buying this piece of equipment for my South Campus. You really want to make sure that you are providing the narrative that we don't have to ask questions regarding why they're putting that item and where that item would go, or even in a staff position, full-time instructor, culinary program at the South Campus. You really want to be able to, we can read it and see the story from that budget narrative. And that, again, that's across all of our programs. You'll also find in our budget narrative section for secondary and post-secondary, we do ask you to do some additional items. We ask you to tell us, using those 9 required or permissive use of fund items, tell me, by spending this particular item on our budget, which of those are you addressing? Are you addressing your 9 required with this budget item? Will you be addressing under permissive use of fund? And I'll go into a little bit more detail with that a little later. Making sure I'm on schedule and following our outline. So on slide 24, the PowerPoint presentation kind of lists for you some of those budget categories that we commonly see. I'll caution you to contractual service. That would mean if you're spending money for a service, it could be professional development, and the individual is not employed with your district or college, that you need to contract out for that service, then you really need to pay attention to the contract service category. We've provided on our website under our resources a useful and a very helpful PowerPoint presentation that kind of gives you some tips on how to write a contractual service agreement. The Division of Financial Services thinks that that topic is so important. They have a full manual that's also linked on our website on how to write contractual service agreements. If you choose to include a contract service in your original budget, you will be required to provide us with that contract prior to the award. Many times our agencies are in long-standing relationships. With the federal money, you can only contract from July 1 to June 30th. You can't enter multiple-year contracts, because we're not sure that we would receive multi-year funding. So be mindful that a contract can only cover a program period, and that you follow the contract service agreement instructions either through that PowerPoint presentation and or looking at the Department of Financial Services resource guide. Slide 25, just remind our colleges and districts about function codes, object codes. School districts are required to do both function and object. Our colleges are only required for the object code. And this long slide, again, expounds on the administrative costs and indirect costs that I've already mentioned, the maximum of 5%. Slide 27, again, goes back to that contract service. It's really, really important that you take a look at this website, print that document. It's a very wonderful guide that can help you simplify writing those. We also have examples here of other contract service agreements if you choose to do so. Slide 28 reminds us of the equipment requirement. Just to reiterate, regardless of the price, any item purchased with federal dollars should be on your physical inventory and tagged. Conditions of acceptance. Your 100A is the form that your superintendent and or college president would sign. It's important that if for some reason the president or superintendent's not able to sign that document, many times they would give their signature authority to a different person in the agency. Please make sure you provide us the letter that authorized someone other than the college president or superintendent signature. Budget narrative. I spent some time on budget narratives. I could probably do a whole two-hour session on simply budget narrative, because we spend a lot of time on the programmatic part, don't get me wrong, but because we're in a continuation mode and you're pretty much enhancing and continuing to do the same types of services, a lot of time is spent on the budget narrative to make sure that all parts and pieces of that align with the OMB circular and those permissive use of fund categories. So please spend some time on that. Also, please pull your budget narrative and applications that you submitted in the 13-14 year. Many times the staff spend hours working with local programs
on enhancing the application. And then in the next year, it's as if we never had the conversation before. You need to pull the application that's attached to the award letter, because the copy of the application attached to the award letter would include all of those handwritten statements, any strike-throughs. Perhaps we required you to send us additional information that was not in the original submission. So I strongly encourage you to use as your example the actual 1314 application attached to the award notification. In some cases, we may have some new directors out there. Give us a call, because we can quickly send you an email copy of your current year application as originally approved and any subsequent amendments, perhaps, that took place. So we're just on call away, and we can help you. But that's really, really, really important, because we go through that same process all over again, and the first thing they say, oh, we didn't use the final copy. We went back to our original. So please look at the final version. Okay, I heard a sound, but we're going to keep going. Slide 30, where to submit your application. And this slide specifically is talking about the competitive DJJ 7 copies, because we have to use those copies to give out to our evaluators. But our secondary and all others is only 3 copies, one original and 3 copies. If you're submitting for the DJJ, it would be one original and 7 copies to the address listed here. Wow, I get to pause for a minute, and we'll have Amy come on, and she'll talk with you about performance accountability, probably speak with you a little bit about programs of study. I think you did some unique things there. And then I'll come back on after Amy and kind of wrap up the conversation and answer any questions that you may have regarding the submission of the application.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Amy. As Gloria mentioned, I'm going to talk today about Perkins accountability, specifically about performance measures and what's involved in that process. So if you go to slide 32, as hopefully you all probably know, we do have performance measures. We are required by law to develop valid and reliable measures for each indicator of performance in order to accurately measure the performance of Florida's CTE students. States and local programs must report on separate core indicators of performance for secondary and post-secondary students. We have secondary measures. We have two versions of post-secondary measures. We have clock hour, which sometimes we call adult measures, and then we have the post-secondary college credit measures. You can find more information on those. I did not put them on the slides here, but you can find more information on how those are operationalized on our website, specifically on the Perkins 4 resources webpage. And if you go to the division's webpage, you can find that very easily on the left-hand side. Florida has developed a web-based system that allows local eligible recipients to view local performance levels in relation to state negotiated targets. This is what we call our data tool. I have put down there the third bullet has the web address on there that you can find that information at. If you're interested in that, that web tool, simply you can go in there and you can click on your district or your college and see what your targets are, how you performed in the past few years, and you can also check in relation to how you performed by the state. Okay, if you turn to slide 33, as Gloria mentioned a little bit earlier, we do have a law we call a LOPL system is a separate system that talks about accepting and negotiating your targets, completing PIPs, et cetera. You will receive information under separate cover on how to access this system. That is coming separately. That will come from the chancellor. We are working on that fast and furiously right now to get that out to you. But as she mentioned, some of the things you can do with this system, which we call the LOPL system, is accept Division's 1415 local performance targets that have been pre-populated as local 1415 targets. You can enter the narratives in order to fulfill the local application requirement. You can develop program improvement plans if applicable. Some people have to complete those, some do not. I'll talk about those a little bit further in a little bit. You can download and sign an attestation form on agency letterhead. And local agencies that choose to negotiate a target will need to contact their FLDOE program manager, as Gloria mentioned. Okay, if you turn to slide 34, I'm not going to go through all of these, but these are our targets for the secondary measures. These are the 1415 targets that the state has to reach, and your targets will be based on these. If you go to slide 35, you can find our college credit or post-secondary targets for the state. And then if you go to slide 36, our adult or clock hour targets. Those are, again, are our state targets. Your targets will be set based on these targets for 1415, and we will let you know as soon as possible. If you go to slide 37, again, this is just emphasizing that we are going to let you know as soon as possible, and it will be sent separately on how to access our system. And you can also, once you get there, you can also look at the implementation guide, which, by the way, is up, can be found on the Perkins for Resources webpage. And it is up, and you can also find out some information on the implementation guide, should you have any. And also feel free to contact myself as well, should you have questions. Okay, slide 38. I wanted to talk a little bit about improvement plans. As I mentioned earlier, we are required to annually evaluate the performance of the career and technical education activities of each eligible recipient using local adjusted levels of performance. We, as a state, are required to be evaluated and complete these performance measures each year. Therefore, you are as well. The way that we do that is through our program improvement plans. Now, each eligible recipient needs to complete a program improvement plan performance if they do not meet 90% of their local agreed-upon target. So you will be notified once you get into this system that you'll see. You'll know if you're looking at, say, you're a district and you have secondary measures, you'll see, hey, I did not meet 4S1. It's going to tell me, do I need to complete a PIP? It's going to say yes by that. And then it's going to go into, you're going to click on that, and it's going to have separate questions for you to fill out and complete. So beyond the narrative that we mentioned that you have to do when you get into the LOPL system, this LOPL system will also allow you to complete these improvement plans. It'll have separate questions that you need to answer. When you are developing these plans, it is highly encouraged that you consult with us, as well as appropriate agencies in your local areas and individuals and organizations, to give special consideration to performance gaps identified under the section of the law included here on the PowerPoint. On slide 39, you are required by law in these program improvement plans. You'll see when you get in there some of the questions that we ask are centered around these specific information. Specifically, identify and quantify any disparities or gaps in performance between any such category of students and performance of students served by the eligible recipient under this act. Categories of students is aggregated by race, ethnicity, gender, disability status, migrant status, English proficiency, and economically disadvantaged. We will be providing you as well when we send you out information about the LOPL system. We will be also providing you with local level data reports. These will be specific to your district or your college, so you will be able to drill down into how specific students did in specific programs. If you're a district, for example, you'll be able to look and see how students did in specific programs at the high, even at the school level. Those will be coming again separately as one big packet with your information on how to access a LOPL system. You'll also get information on these local level data reports and how to use them, and you can view them for all sorts of information. Again, if you have questions about them, you can let me know. I will also let you know at this point that we will be working a little more closely when we have in years past with those agencies that have not that have had to complete a program improvement plan for the same measure for 3 or more years. There is a measure, a requirement in the law that if you have not that if you have failed to meet 90% of your target for 3 or more years, it does need to be addressed. We as a state need to address that. Therefore, we're going to be working more closely with our locals to address that. And we have identified those locals out there who have had one or more measures where they had to complete a program improvement plan for 3 or more years. Some have had to complete one, some have had to complete as many as 5. Some have had to complete the same PIT for a performance measure for 4 or 5 years, for as long as the act has been in place. So please be on the lookout for that and the information that you receive. Okay. On slide 40, just wanted to give you some information as well on technical skill attainment. Some of you may be familiar with that. We will be in the next month putting out our information on the technical skill attainment inventory. If you're interested in that, interested in requesting new languages to that inventory, be on the lookout for that. You can find out more information here on this. Again, this is the website which you see on slide 40. This is the exact website for the Perkins 4 Resources website. And when we are looking at the attainment inventory, we are looking at assessments in these 5 areas: at federal or state regulatory agency developed assessments, industry developed assessments, industry developed end of program assessments, proprietary company developed assessments, and third party developed assessments. So please be on the lookout for that. Hopefully most of you out there are familiar with that. But again, you can find out more information about the technical skill attainment inventory on the Perkins 4 Resources website. Okay. Moving on, we're going to skip over slide 41, not just the introductory slide to program study, and go to slide 42. In the RSA, there is a separate section devoted specifically to program of studies. This is a requirement of the law. By law, every agency is required to have one program of study. We as a state are encouraging all agencies to convert all of their programs over to a program of study. Just wanted to go through some of the parts of the law with you as it regards to programs of study. A written articulation agreement must be in place for each program of study that establishes and validates the career pathway. The articulation agreement is defined in specific section of the Act. That's included there on the PowerPoint. All articulation agreements must be signed and approved by the agency head of each participating secondary and post-secondary LEA. So your college presidents and your district superintendents need to sign that articulation agreement. And a program of study must include a locally endorsed sequence of core academic and CTE courses from grade 9 all the way through the post-secondary component. We have, again, going back to the program to the Perkins 4 Resources webpage, we have a section of that webpage devoted to programs of study. We have templates under there should you be interested in looking at those, and we have those for each career cluster area. So if you would like to, you can go and take a look at those and use those as a sample. I know some of you out there have been working on this for a long time and have some great templates out there that others may want to contact you should they be interested. Okay, moving to slide 43, some other parts of the law as it regards to programs of study. They must lead to a post-secondary credential. This could include certificates, diplomas, degrees, industry certifications or licensures, and they should afford students the opportunity for continued education as well as access to the skilled workforce. Okay, each program of study is also expected to be guided by the workforce and economic development needs of the business industry, the community, and employment opportunities for students. So you should be working with your local industry, your local businesses, and organizations to help develop these programs of study. They shouldn't be done just solely at the institution or solely between the post-secondary and secondary institution. They should be done in collaboration. Okay. All programs of study requirements must be met with state grant funds. There is no separate funding for a program of study. There is no separate part of the funding in the Perkins grant that you can use towards meeting this requirement. It must be done through your basic funds. And the specific requirements regarding programs of study should be addressed in the RFA. Again, there is a whole section of the RFA that addresses this issue. The next slide goes through, the next few slides actually, go through
what the actual requirements are in the RFA in regards to programs of study. I will not go through all of these one by one. I will tell you that what we tried to do is a few years back, the U.S. DOE put out a 10 essential components or a program of study or the 10 essential components of a framework to study, and we tried to use that and look at those components and incorporate them into the questions that we asked, so therefore we can help you make sure that you are meeting those requirements. So we added some new questions this year and also deleted some questions that were redundant or weren't germane to those 10 essential components that were published by the US DOE. Some of the things we tried to emphasize this year were guidance counselors and professional development. Articulation agreements have always been a part of that. We tried to emphasize that as well. If you go on to slide 46, we also tried to make clear that when you're giving us information about programs, make sure that you're looking separately at the program. Some people take all their high schools and consider that to be multiple programs. So if you're offering digital design at three high schools, you had three programs. Well, that's not how we're looking at it. You have one program that's offered at three high schools. So we wanted to make sure that you understand that when you're completing these forms. If you offer digital design, it's at three high schools, you're only offering that program once. That's one program. Nursing is offered at five high schools. We're only looking at it once. We don't need to look at it five different times. So you would have just two programs instead of eight, so to speak. So take a look at these questions. There are multiple questions in there. They've been amended a little bit since the last year. If you have any questions about this portion of the RFA, please do not hesitate to contact me. My information is here in the PowerPoint. You can also contact Diane Villa-Gomez. Her information is also on the Division of Career and Adult Education webpage. You can find information on there. And the last thing, I wanted to go to slide 48. If you were interested in taking an extensive look at what the US DOE published in regards to program of study and what we're trying to do with our programs of study, you can go to the website that's on there to look at their design framework. It goes into extensive detail on there on what they're trying to do. We have also put this information, again, going back to our Perkins for Resources webpage. You can find a lot of information on there. You can also find a link to this design framework that the US DOE has put out under our section on program study. Again, that's also where you can find all the templates for all the different career clusters, as well as some other basic information on programs of study. All right, I'm going to pass it back off to Gloria.
Thank you, Amy. I'd like to introduce our compliance director, Ellen McCarron. She would like to kind of just introduce herself. I think she's met a lot of you guys, so it won't be an introduction, but just to speak a little bit on a couple of hot topics regarding compliance monitoring.
Good morning, everyone. I'll be very brief. During this period of applying for your grants and really preparing for next year, on the compliance side, what we would ask you to take into special consideration is the things that we find most often that are problematic there in the field, and that would be two main areas. One, your inventory. We would ask you to please pay special attention to the EDGAR requirements as well as the state requirements, and you can find all of those on the websites, and if you need any help with those, you can call me or Gloria or anyone. We'll direct you to the exact requirements. But inventory is usually very problematic, but it doesn't have to be with proper planning. We can refer you to some of the institutions with best practices for help if you need it, but inventory is definitely one that is problematic. The other one is compliance with the Anti-Discrimination Act requirements, and most particularly within that purview, the relatively new element of genetic identity as a protected class. Most everyone we've seen has some form of anti-discrimination postings, which is a good thing, but the postings usually don't have the genetic identity piece. So please pay special attention to that as we go out into the field during 14-15. We will be having those as findings next year. So if you're going to be printing any new information this year, go ahead and make sure you have that genetic identity piece in your statement. And that's really it for me. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. You'll get an opportunity to meet with Ellen at the FACTI conference coming up in July. She's going to have a session on our compliance monitoring risk matrix and the monitoring tool. So for those of you who have not had an opportunity to meet her, you'll get an opportunity then. As well as at FACTI, I will be doing a session. I'm calling it Perkins 101, something very similar to that. It has been a while since I've had an opportunity to come out and meet with you. With it being in July, a lot of times I'm here working on getting the grant awards issued. But I've committed to come out, so those new directors that perhaps have not had an opportunity to go through that process, I look forward to meeting you as well. As we close out the conference call today, I just want to kind of go back to the RFA, highlight a few things, speak to you about some of the reference documents that will be helpful to you, and then I'll open up for Q&A at that time. Again, I'm using the post-secondary as my primary reference, but you will find, regardless to the application type, the information is typically the same because it's all coming under the same federal fund source. So one of the things I'm looking at is on page 25 of the post-secondary application is an example of the budget narrative. I did spend a little time talking about that earlier. But this is an excellent example on how to document your performance required measures and required use of funds. And this was just an example that we chose to put in the application. Some of the other items in the attachment section, quickly, we call it our required and permissive use of funds document. It's my page 28 and 29, 30. Size, scope, and quality. We have a form for you that establishes size, scope, and quality, which is a requirement under the law. You'll find that in our implementation guide, you would be required to do this form and submit this form, one for an example of a small district example was provided here. And page 33, again, of the post-secondary application, a self-evaluation. You'll find a self-evaluation document in each of our application types other than our DJJ. And perhaps I don't have the DJJ application in front of me, but perhaps you may even find a self-eval there. Nope, no self-eval in the DJJ. But in all of the other categories, this is important. This also helps us know if you require technical assistance. Again, we do know that there are some new directors out there that may require some additional help in the preparation of your application. You can give us a call. Give me a call or your program manager a call. So on page 35, it asks, do you need technical assistance beyond what we've offered today, or technical assistance generally in implementation of your program. By the time you submit this, you may want to be a little specific on those types of professional development or technical assistance items that we could be useful and help you with. If my office cannot assist you because we're one big team, I'm able to refer it out to Amy, refer it out to Kathleen to make sure that we can assist and help you achieve your goals. We call it our little cheat sheet, but we did provide for you the performance measures in our various categories. You'll find the allocation chart on the workforce board coordinated form. This is a requirement under the law that all federal programs coordinate with the one-stop centers and the local Workforce Board. I think they've changed their name to CareerSource. This is just an information document. We're not asking, and you're not asking permission from them to offer anything, but we found that this is very helpful when you notify your local board, because in the event they would have individuals that require training, they can always reference this document to say, hey, I know that this local tech center or this college is offering a program that you're interested. So it's an information document to keep them in the loop on our offerings. And the last few documents would be your budget form, your agency signature document, as well as your checklist. And I'll just say a little bit about the checklist. We try so hard to put all of the items that are required in the application on this checklist. It will be very helpful if you put your application in that order, because it does help our staff here at the department as they go through to verify that you've submitted all of the required documents. With that, I'm going to quickly go to the resource documents. On our link, on our division page, going to federal grant, you'll find all of these documents listed there. Our Perkins 4 resource document, our quality assurance document, OMB, slide 51, a couple of other documents. All of these documents over the period of the year implementing your program, you will probably access at some point in the year. I think Ellen kind of chimed in on some common issues that she's discovered while going out to visit. Please look at those. Make sure that you are aware of those. I'm going to just allow Marcy to introduce our online system, and then I'm going to come back for questions and answers. Marcy?
Hi, my name is Marcy Sigg, and I basically work with developing the RFAs, RFPs, and helping to manage our Bureau's website. We basically just wanted to let you guys know that we do have an online survey posted. It's the same place where you found your presentation today. It's listed under Perkins Conference Call. Also, you can access it directly from your presentation. There's a web link on page 54. It is very short and brief. It is anonymous. However, if you would like to leave your contact information, you can at the very end of the survey, and we can get back to you that way. We do value your input. I personally will read every one that you send in, and we will look at that and maybe possibly make changes to our presentations for next year. So anyhow, your input is very important to us, and we appreciate your time.
Questions. At this time, we'll open up for questions. If you would at least let me know the agencies that you're from and your name, just in case we have to get back to you for additional comments. But at this time, I'll open up for questions regarding any of the discussion points that we've had today.
Laura?
Yes?
Chris Berkster, County Schools. Good morning. If there was any language out there that we could access that would help us with the new piece in the anti-discrimination postings, the genetic identity piece.
Yes, this is Ellen. The name of the act, so you can look it up on the website, is Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008. I don't have the USC reference with me handy. The Green Book is being updated to reflect the complete reference, but if you want to just Google it, it's the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008, which became effective November 1st of 2009.
Thank you, Ellen. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Any additional questions regarding the application submission?
Yes, hi, Gloria. This is Arlinda Smith from Duval County.
Yes, Linda.
I have Lewis Simmons, my program manager here, and he has a question regarding the indirect cost.
Yes.
Okay, on the approved narrative that came back, the percent was changed from what we submitted. Is there a value that we should be using?
Our grants management office under Sue Wilkinson, her staff determines the allocable indirect cost items and amount that you can use. I can refer you to her office. Her address, I don't have her phone number listed in here, but if you will call me offline, I can give you her phone number.
But okay.
There is a separate review of the indirect cost rate. Do note that a combination of your indirect charges as well as your admin charges for this particular federal program cannot exceed 5%. But
right.
Yes, they do take a look at that.
I just wanted to get that percentage because it was changed when we got the when we got the approval back, and then of course that changed that line item.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wanted to be as accurate as we could.
Yes. Call me after this, and I'll give you Sue's direct number.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Lanchika Jackson with Northwest Florida State College. I have a question regarding the personnel you were talking about with supplanting, because that's, the rules are not changing, but the detail is getting more in depth.
Is it possible you can repeat your question?
My question is dealing with supplanting. So when you mention the personnel, if are you regarding, let's say we have a position at the institution, and we want to offset, we're modifying that position to be more involved with career and tech ed, would that be allowable?
I'm going to repeat what I think I heard you say. You said that you have an existing position at the campus,
mm-hmm.
and you are modifying that position, and you're adding additional CTE responsibilities to that position.
Correct.
Then the added responsibility and the rate can be charged. But
okay.
if the person, the same person was in the, well, not the same person, but if the position was being charged to the state workforce fund or any fund source for that matter, you can't switch the entire position over to the federal program, only the additional responsibility and cost.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Gloria?
Yes?
Hi, Gloria. This is Stephanie Holly from Washington Homes Technical.
Yes.
Your description of supplanting was probably the best I've ever heard. Would you mind including your layman's description of that in the Q&As?
I will. Now, we only have Q&A for the DJJ. And we don't have any Q&A posted for this particular one. So we don't have a posting for Q&A right now for Carl D. Perkins' program. But
Can I just write you?
Yes.
In that description, it was just so good.
Yes. If you would like to contact me, my phone number is 850-245-9053. And I can refer you to the site, and we can make sure you get it in the layman terms.
Thank you so much.
I have a question.
And I'm speaking to?
Hi, this is Lisa Yoxo from St. Petersburg College.
Okay, hi, Lisa.
Hi. So the other day on the bimonthly call, Mr. Duckworth answered the question in regard to not using these funds for AA or bachelor's degrees, which is already our understanding, but it would be helpful. And he, let me give you a little background. I'm a little new to this position. I started in October. So that was always my understanding since coming on board. It would be helpful to have that in writing. Is that a possibility?
I'm going to let Amy Albee answer that question from a program standpoint.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Amy. Yes, Chancellor Duckworth did talk about, the question was raised whether or not the funds could be used for BAS, Bachelor of Applied Science, the Baccalaureate, or the AA, and the answer is no. And whether or not this in writing, we'd have to work with Chancellor Duckworth and get something out. What might happen is we're working on some pieces of legislation right now, specifically the Tech Center bill and offering AASs at the tech centers, and it may be part of that because it may open up questions on how can we spend our money at the tech centers, our Perkins money for these programs. Is there any changes we need to look at? We might be able to address it at that time.
I also like to add the use of the funds for a BS degree is in law.
Yes.
So I can refer you to the Perkins law that specifically note that you cannot use any of the dollars to support bachelor's degree program. So
Right. Okay.
It is in the law. So I can
Right. I'm aware of that. It would be helpful to have it reiterated if you could at some point.
Okay. Are you getting lots of questions that you're
Well, the reason I'm asking is as they're thinking about, you know, the next round of Perkins and then possible changes that might happen someday. And one of the questions that comes up is, you know, some AA degrees that are very sort of workforce-oriented or stackable credential-oriented that have a similar thread of what we're trying to accomplish over here. And we have some bachelors of applied science that are, again, have a similar thread to what we accomplish here or that build upon our associate science degrees. And so I get the question frequently of, okay, we get CTE, but these are sort of CTE-ish, and why can't we build off of that?
Mm-hmm. And when the law was written in 2006, I mean, that was not taken into account. And they have been, I don't know if you've read the blueprint for the new version. And I don't think that, of course, everything is subject to change, you know that. But in the new version, I don't think that there would be any room to open it up to baccalaureate or AA degrees either.
Okay.
But there's always a possibility. But I can tell you that the discussions that have been had over the past year and a half regarding the new version of Perkins 5, that has not come up. But we can definitely work with the chancellor to get something out to reiterate reiterate that question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Melissa O'Connell with St. John's River State College. I have
Hello.
A question. Hi. I have a question about the rural application.
Yes.
If we select under the letter of agreement options, item 3, so that we split the funds and in separate applications, if that causes our allocation splitting to go below the $50,000, does that minimum requirement apply to us? Or is it based on the total application that we're splitting, which is above $50,000?
The minimum requirement of the $50,000 is on your post-secondary allocation. The rule is partially POP allocation does not tie back to that, unless you're giving someone some of your post-secondary allocation, which I don't think you're going to do that.
No.
The rule in Sparsely Pop is only for that added amount. Only for that added amount. So you have to keep those two separate. You have a minimum requirement for your post-secondary allocation, which is $50,000.
Okay.
So,
good. That helps a lot. I have a second question, if that's okay. With the programs of study, there are, although some of the questions have changed, are there questions that we can say no plan changes in that section, section 2? Or do you want us to get all of them in section 2, even if we're not planning any changes?
You need to respond to those. And there are some that will be the same. But there are some that will be different, but you do need to respond to those. You do need to get an answer.
Thank you, Amy.
Uh-huh.
This is Ann Leonard in Bay County. I have a quick question. Last year, after I submitted my grant, I was waiting for the award letter, and when I called to find out the status, I was told that I had not submitted a letter from our superintendent requesting the extension of Perkins. Does that letter need to be included this year? And I apologize if I didn't get into the conference call until late. So does that need to be submitted again?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Ellie Parsons from Martin County School District. I have a quick question about indirect costs. I received a letter from my finance director from the Office of the Comptroller stating that the indirect cost for 14-15 was 7.03%. And I contacted DOE to confirm that this is also applicable to the Perkins. And I was told that it is, but my concern is if it says that local administrative cost is no more than 5%, then how can indirect cost be 7%?
Yeah. Your agency establishes and negotiates an indirect cost rate with the agency. When the grant management office was reviewing your indirect cost charges, or itemized items, they have to take in consideration this specific law. I'm not sure who provided you that answer, but under the law, and I do cite the section of law, we cannot exceed 5% in this particular federal program. Sometimes people speak generically across all federal programs, and that's not a good idea, but under the law for this particular one, it is maxed out at 5%.
Okay. In case my finance department questions why I'm putting 5% instead of the 7, can you direct me to where I can get the exact wording of that so that they can be made aware of it, or is it just the wording that's in the RSA that I can use?
I'm trying to find that page in the RSA quickly. If you take them to the law, Section 3.1 or the law, Section 135, it will tell them, it will demonstrate to them that it is indirect included in the administration cost. But if you have difficulties, have them to call me or
Wilkinson,
and we can walk them through it and help them get the clarification that they need. But it is maxed at 5%.
Perfect. Thank you. And I have a follow-up question, and you probably don't have an answer to this. Is there any foreseeable impact on our Perkins funding with this Senate Bill 850 that looks to be coming forward with all of these tape digital tool certificates at elementary and middle school levels?
I cannot answer that question. You are correct. I'm unfortunately not versed on that particular bill and to be able to elaborate how it would impact, but I am not. Amy, do you have any information?
I don't. This is Amy. I don't have extensive information, but what I will say is that what we always do every year is put out a memo from the chancellor that describes each piece of legislation that's passed that may affect us. And that will certainly be one of them, obviously. So we will put something out there, and we will let you know again.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy. And thank you, Gloria.
Thanks. Well, on behalf of our Chancellor, Rod Duckworth, we'd like to thank you guys for participating in our call today. Again, if you have any questions, please feel free to give our program manager a call, or you may call me directly. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, you too.